We're going to talk now about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren's proposal to break up big tech companies if she's elected president in 2020. Here's Warren earlier this month at the Music and Media Conference, South by Southwest.
I'm deeply concerned right now that the space around companies like Amazon, Facebook, Google is now referred to by venture capitalists as the kill zone. So my view is break those things apart and we will have a much more competitive, robust market in America.
Now, there are a lot of ifs here. She'd have to secure the Democratic nomination and win the general election, but let's put her campaign for president aside for a moment. She wants to break up these companies under the 1890 Sherman Act antitrust law, which aims to protect the process of competition, among other things. But her overarching idea made us wonder, is there a precedent for doing something like this, and something that might hold lessons for lawmakers today? The closest we could find was the breakup of telecommunications giant AT&T, the Bell System. So we reached Richard John. He's a professor of history and communications at Columbia University and author of Network Nation, Inventing American Telecommunications. And he reminded us that the Bell System first split up in 1913, but the company's power continued to grow, so regulators stepped in again in the 80s.
At that time, the Bell Company owned the telephone equipment. You didn't own the telephone in your own home, believe it or not. But even more importantly was the way the rates were structured. The idea was to provide low-cost local telephone service so that everybody could make a call across town or order groceries or talk to friends and neighbors. Long-distance telephone service, which was operated by a division of the Bell System, was priced quite high, and that was a key issue in the 84 breakup because there were technical advances and there was a political opening that made it possible for rivals to undercut Bell in the provisioning of long-distance telephone service. The Bell System was always very highly regulated, and that was one of the reasons it was so successful. Regulation and innovation have often gone hand in glove in the United States.
I'm curious if you could tell us about a settlement in 1913 that goes even further back.
It's startling because it was the first great antitrust suit in telecommunications. So in a sense, it's the narrative for what's going on today. And like so many of these antitrust suits, it has a tangled history, but it had a very important outcome. In 1890, Congress enacted a law to make illegal restraints against trade and monopolizing. Now, those are two things that are very broad. It's like free speech or freedom of religion, and it's very hard to know what those two things mean. But by 1911, there was a consensus that certain kinds of business behavior would be declared by the courts to violate the Sherman Act, particularly pricing, price fixing, or any kind of agreement or certain kinds of market concentration above a percentage. But it's very hard to know precisely what those boundaries were. And that was the issue that the Supreme Court was being asked to adjudicate in 1913 when Bell, working together with an attorney general who was really quite aggressive, they got together and they agreed that Bell would divest itself of Western Union, which was a telegraph network provider.
Was the thinking there that they would have been too big and too powerful?
Yes. Too big, too powerful, unaccountable. But just as importantly, Bell agrees that it will, in effect, work with the federal government, work with the courts, work with the Interstate Commerce Commission to financially protect the rest of the telephone sector. And that bargain, that grand bargain, would be in place from 1913 right through to 1984. Mm. So for listeners, it's a complicated agreement,
yeah.
But it shows how lawmakers who are really quite aggressive and hostile toward a major corporation, one of the biggest corporations in the world, can force it to do something that it didn't want to do, with the ultimate result being benefit for the public good.
That's an interesting lesson. So it was a settlement and not, they weren't forced to do it.
Correct. These are politically negotiated settlements.
And yet they still needed to step in 84.
To put simply, what happened in 84 was that there was a deal that Bell cut with regulators, mostly at the state level in the 50s and 60s, that came apart in the 1970s, in part because you have new methods of sending messages long distance. Older listeners may remember you used to punch in all those numbers to get a Sprint line.
Right.
So there was a technical change that kind of forced the issue. But there was also a breakdown in the consensus that we should coordinate communication networks as, in effect, if not a legal monopoly, but a single dominant player. Ronald Reagan didn't want to break up the Bell system. It was not an issue about which there were thousands of Americans signing petitions and lobbying. It was an initiative that was promoted by a Texas judge and some of the suppliers of the equipment that would become the cell phone industry. Mm-hmm. Without the 84 settlement, it's hard to imagine the cell phone industry emerging as it has. And of course, as listeners know, the rise of the cell phone industry is an extraordinary technical development of the last 20 years or so that was completely unimaginable in 1984.
So just to maybe briefly recap here, if we think about AT&T through its history, came up against, as you call it, a hostile government, but came to settlements at least three times in its history. And that brings us to today, though, when we think about Elizabeth Warren's proposal and her thoughts on breaking up the Facebooks and the Amazons and the Googles of the world. How do you see those connecting?
Well, you know, historians aren't prophets, but I can look back on where we've been. And I will say that obviously you're going to have opposition to hostile legal action from Google, Facebook, Amazon. They're very big and they're very hard to contain technically.
But are they monopolies?
Well, the trouble with calling it a monopoly is you end up then talking with the economists and these narrow criteria about market share and so on. They're dominant players. They have a great deal of power. They can affect a lot of people's lives, and therefore they should be subject to regulation. And I think, by the way, regulation was good for the telephone industry. It was good for Bell. Mm-hmm. And regulation, good for Facebook, Google, and Amazon. If the history is any lesson, that can be good not only for consumers, good for corporations, and also good for the citizenry. The stakes are high, and I believe that it's time for the government to act responsibly to help to rein them in.
You know, we've talked to others on Radio Boston, including Michael Strain. He's director of economic policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Mm-hmm. He poo-pooed this idea, and he says in many cases, Amazon has been a check on high prices and that Facebook and Google, for the most part, are free for their consumers to use. So how do you respond to that?
Well,
that
it depends what you mean by low prices and free. I mean, their Amazon prices are low. There's a question about what products you're looking at when you go on an Amazon site. And with Facebook and Google, I mean, they're basically big advertisers. Mm-hmm. We've seen the influence of Facebook in elections. We've seen the influence of Facebook in promoting all kinds of social movements, some of which are quite dangerous and worrisome. And so to say that it's free and therefore no one should pay any attention, I think is really short-sighted, and it's not good for the interests, economic, political, of American people. So this is not the tradition that gave us the innovation that made the United States in the mid-20th century such an innovative country.
So let's talk a little bit about the public good piece of this, because is there
which
something,
is a very important piece.
I think so, and I think that's, if I'm understanding correctly, that's at the core of the AT&T story, and maybe it's at the core of Facebook, Google, Amazon. Is there something about these companies today that makes them categorically different from, say, an AT&T or another company that could have been broken up or settled under the Sherman Act?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Facebook, to take that example, does not build out infrastructure. It largely relies on other people's infrastructure. Bell built out its own infrastructure. They controlled the pipes, and they built the pipes. And with Amazon, you've got a whole different set of questions, because you've got this question of what is a market? What is a fair market? Whose goods and services are being advertised? Is Amazon using the information that you are providing it with in order to jigger the markets to its own advantage or to favored suppliers? This is a set of questions that I think even the most conservative economists find troubling, because economics as a discipline is bound up with the notion that there really are markets and markets should function effectively. And if there is no market for goods and services, then we have a problem.
So thinking about the markets and trying to put politics aside, and what are some of the lessons then finally, that we can draw from the past for these companies moving forward?
Complicated network platforms have always been regulated. So the question is not, are we going to regulate them now? The question is, how are we going to regulate them? They've always been regulated. The second takeaway is that relatively heavy-handed regulation, and even regulation, and in some instances quite properly was regarded as extortionate, can promote innovation. Obviously, certain kinds of regulation can be damaging, but in the American experience, regulation and innovation have more often than not gone together. And just a final observation is that Facebook, Google, Amazon are all built on infrastructure that was funded, paid for, and largely invented by government, by tax dollars, by us. And these are services that are have become, if not essential, certainly very convenient for millions and millions of Americans. And that means that they their managers have an obligation to coordinate them in a way that promotes the public good.
And we haven't even touched on, you know, abuses of privacy or uses of data, but
which are all very relevant questions that I am confident that lawmakers will take up, because if only because those are issues that are not really left-right issues. Mm. There's a lot of good libertarian conservative reasons to be concerned about violations of privacy.
Well, that's Richard John. He's a professor of history and communications at Columbia University, and he's the author of Network Nation, Inventing American Telecommunications. Professor John, thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.